We begin with the situation in the Pacific. Is it a situation or is it a game of chicken? At this point, it really doesn't matter because nations are compelled to respond to the latest threats from North Korea. Pyongyang has reportedly moved a missile system closer to its coast, while the U.S. says it will install a new land-based defensive missile system on the island of Guam. Pentagon officials say that will free up a pair of Aegis-class mobile missile cruisers to take up positions closer to the Korean Peninsula. The latest threats from North Korea seem to single out military assets on Guam, which include U.S. B-2 and B-52 bombers and F-22 stealth fighters. The moment of explosion is approaching fast. That's a quote from the general staff of the North Korean People's Army in a statement from North Korean state media. Well, joining us now is Nicholas Burns, who served as Undersecretary of State at the State Department for President Bush. He's currently professor of the practice of diplomacy and international politics at Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government. Nicholas Burns, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So what do you make of this? Is the moment of explosion approaching fast? Where do you see it coming?
Probably not. But, you know, this regime in North Korea, led by this 30-year-old untested leader, Kim Jong-un, has a history of making provocative and even incendiary statements. They're trying to get the attention of the United States, of South Korea and Japan to return to these six-party talks. They're trying actually, you know, a form of international diplomatic blackmail in order to get what they want, which is fuel and food and credit to run their state-controlled economy. And so they make these charges hoping that other countries will react.
In a pretty interesting commentary you have on Global Post, you posit that on the one hand, this could be Kim Jong-un behaving exactly like his father in the sense that he's bluffing, or it could be Kim Jong-un rebelling against his father and actually crossing some lines that his late father never crossed. What do you think it is here?
Well, it's very hard to know because we don't know a lot about this regime. It's reclusive. It's secretive. It's almost a hermit kingdom, this mafia-run government controlled by this one family. He does seem, Kim Jong-un, to be channeling his father and to be going back to the playbook of the North Koreans. And that is you jump up and down, you scream, you make these threats, and you hope that you're going to be able to gain some leverage in negotiations with the Chinese or particularly with the United States. I think it's probable, and most experts would say, that these are just threats, that the North Koreans have no intention of engaging the United States in war because they would lose a big time in a war with the United States. And it's very risky for them to do much with the South Koreans because of the new president, as you know, of South Korea. And she obviously needs to defend her country, and she's an ally of the United States. So I would think that we're not going to see the type of, you know, major problem that the North Koreans are alleging is going to begin soon.
But commentators on this program have said that the South Korean leadership, which you just alluded to, is weak right now in a domestic political crisis that North Korea may be attempting to exploit and that that's prolonging this. What's your view?
Well, the North Koreans have a history of acting up during times of transition in South Korea, in Seoul. And so there's just been this presidential election and now a presidential inauguration with President Park in Seoul. And it does, I think, speak to the profound insecurity of this isolated regime about who they are. They have very few friends in the world. In fact, their only friend really is China. And even the Chinese seem to be frustrated with them nowadays. So they've got themselves into a very difficult position. They've made these baseless, preposterous threats. They can't possibly back them up, and they don't have many countries to lean on. And so if a 30-year-old leader does this, he's untested, he doesn't have a lot of experience in this stage of global politics, it's a dangerous situation. And that's why I think the United States has had to respond, as President Obama has done, in a very deliberate but very effective way. The message from Washington has been to Pyongyang, we are stronger than you are. And that's why you see the F-22s and the B-2s being deployed in a show of force to show the North Koreans that they really don't have these options.
But let's both be students of history here. You, a much better student than I am, I'm sure, Nicholas Burns, senior foreign affairs columnist for the Global Post, who served as Undersecretary of State for President Bush. I mean, back during the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Kennedy administration realized it had few bargaining chips and came up with those missiles in Turkey as a way of, having some currency to deal with when the missiles were installed in Cuba. In this particular case, do you think the U.S. has a long list of responses and countermeasures and movements of bombers and cruisers, or a short list here that runs out very, very quickly?
Well, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, of course, in 62, there was parity, strategic military parity, between the Soviet Union and the United States. So Kennedy and Khrushchev both had to step back and compromise to end that crisis. Here, it's a very different situation. The United States is the strongest military power in the Asia-Pacific region. We have bases in South Korea, in Japan. We have the extraordinary Anderson Air Force Base in Guam, a major power projection point. So I think what the United States is going to do is not make a compromise with the North Koreans, but simply face them down. And we have allies on our side, the two that I mentioned, South Korea and Japan, treaty allies. We have the whole world on our side. So I do think, in a way, this is a game of diplomatic chicken. But President Obama has been responsible and I think very effective. You haven't seen President Obama mention Kim Jong-un's name. He's not giving him the time of day, but we're speaking through our actions by deploying our forces, you know, to the Korean Peninsula on a temporary basis. And I think that show of force is going to make the North Koreans pause and think twice about trying to make good on any threats.
Nicholas Burns served as Undersecretary of State at the State Department for President Bush. Mr. Secretary, thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
He's currently professor of the practice of diplomacy and international politics at Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government. Well, can you face down the North Koreans without seeing them face to face? Perhaps the answer here is to stop tiptoeing around and snickering about the strange threats and practices of North Korea and just invite them to the White House or send the Secretary of State to Pyongyang. Diplomacy, where you actually talk with your enemies. Unlike the United States, which does not speak directly to North Korea or its other implacable enemy, Iran. Kishore Mahabani is the dean of the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy at the National University of Singapore and author of The Great Convergence. Dean Mahabani, welcome to The Takeaway.
Pleasure to be here.
Do you think diplomacy here is the better option than the kind of face-down approach that is more of an intimidation strategy that Nicholas Burns was talking about there?
Well, I know Nick Burns and I respect him a great deal. But there's one basic fact about diplomacy that I'm afraid many Americans are not aware of, which is that diplomacy was never invented to enable you to talk to your friends because your friends don't chop off your heads when you go to speak to them. Diplomacy was invented to enable you to talk to your enemies. And this was the wisdom that the human tribe discovered 2,000 or 3,000 years ago. So in some ways, just as North Korea is behaving in a very strange fashion, I completely agree, the United States is also behaving in a very strange fashion, according to the history of humanity, in not talking to its enemies. And so one of the basic points I make is that if you really believe that you want to avoid a war, for 2,000 years, people have discovered the best way to avoid a war is to talk to your enemy. And I'm very puzzled that no American is advocating that today.
But how can you envision a direct face-to-face encounter between Kim Jong-un and Secretary of State John Kerry, for instance? I mean, wouldn't that be a propaganda opportunity and something of a circus that would only benefit Pyongyang?
Well, we have to live with a world that, I mean, you would love to live in a world where everyone you dealt with was like Pope Francis, whom you respect and admire. But that's not the real world. In the real world, you have to deal with very strange people in all kinds of places. And Kim Jong-un is obviously an extreme. But I'm saying even in the most extreme cases, the rules of diplomacy, which have been around for 2,000 or 3,000 years, still apply. And guess what? In the past, if you look at the last 10, 20 years, after every attempt by the North Koreans to be bellicose, some effort was made to talk to them directly or indirectly, and then they backed down. But the point is they are in an absolute corner, and the only option that they have today is to be as bellicose as possible because they find that's the only way they get attention. Just imagine if you gave them attention without them having to get bellicose. That's a reversal of the game that they're playing.
I hate to put you on the spot, but you are the dean of the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy there in Singapore. What would Lee Kuan Yew say about what's going on? Would he call it a game of chicken, do you think?
Well, I think he would certainly advocate that you would take a very tough line with the North Koreans. And by the way, I'm not suggesting in any way that you become soft when you talk to the North Koreans. You, in fact, when you talk to them face to face, it's much easier to deliver the very hard messages. And incidentally, you know, one of the facts about North Korea that very few people realize is that North Korea is probably more frightened, more worried about the threat from China than it is from the threat from America. China is right next door, and the North Koreans have lived with the Chinese for thousands of years. So they have a much bigger concern of China. Just at the height of the Vietnam War, when you were bombing Vietnam, the Vietnamese were still more frightened of China than they were of America. That's a fact of life. So these are all hard geopolitical truths that won't disappear. And that's why I advocate that it is in America's national interest, and I speak as a friend of America, to begin talking to your enemies, no matter who they are, whether it's Iran or Cuba or North Korea. Just talk to them, because that's the first step you have to take to try and figure out a negotiated solution that avoids a direct conflict.
Before we go, should China be more involved in direct negotiations and discussions with North Korea to defuse this?
You know, the Chinese are absolutely exasperated and angry with North Korea. A Chinese Communist Party official published an article in the Financial Times criticizing North Korea. That's absolutely unprecedented. They are also at their wits' end trying to figure out what needs to be done. They're not happy about this at all. They wish they could. And by the way, I gather that they may have already cut off petroleum supplies to North Korea, and they are applying enormous pressures. That's absolutely no doubt about that.
Hmm. Kishore Mahobhani is the dean of the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy at the National University of Singapore and author of The Great Convergence. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.